Okay, good afternoon and welcome to the Football Full Disclosure. This is game week 12 and I think this is episode 7. Marty, can you help me out? This is definitely episode 7, but there we go. We're on episode 7. Oh, we've got a special guest with us. We've got business and economics teacher, Mr. Nathan King. So, hello Nathan, how are you?
Not too bad yourself.
I'm all right. So, you know, I've been trying to get you on the show for a while now and timetable wise. It's madness, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's madness, but we did it. We got you here. And we're going to talk football for about 30 or so minutes. So, you know, this is the Football Full Disclosure. Full disclosure, you know, I'm a Liverpool supporter, obviously. So, full disclosure, you want to let the fans know, who do you support?
Full disclosure, I am a Tottenham Hotspur supporter.
Why do you say it like that?
Had to say the full name.
Tottenham Hotspur supporter.
Yeah, had to be really formal.
Oh, yeah.
Want the audience to know.
Okay, what do you want the audience to know about Tottenham?
Okay, so I think I need to provide context as to why I'm a Spurs supporter. So family-wise, they were all Arsenal supporters.
Really?
Yeah, so...
How did that happen?
Honestly, probably Ian Wright.
Okay.
And there was I think back in the 90s, a lot of the black families,
yes,
they gravitated towards, I guess, just black players.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So Ian Wright was everyone's idol.
Everyone's idol, yeah.
At that time.
Absolutely.
But I'm a rebel without a cause. So I decided to move away.
Okay.
So for a couple of years, I was a glory hunter. So, 1995,
okay.
Kenny Dalglish, Blackburn, won the Premiership.
Yeah, for
one season, I became a Blackburn Rovers supporter.
Yeah.
That didn't fit very well with me.
Alan Shearer, obviously, yeah.
That's right, Chris Sutton. Then I moved to United maybe for about a year.
Okay.
Didn't like that either.
Good move. I can tell you right now, that was a good move.
And then it was out of Wimbledon.
Okay.
Aston Villa and Tottenham. And I just decided Spurs. And the reason being, at that time, Jurgen Klinsmann.
The diver.
Number 18.
He'll always be known as his diver. number 18, the diver.
18, yeah.
But what was it about Klinsmann that, you know, that you gravitated towards him?
He was just a goal scorer. Yeah. I think nowadays there is a lot more to the game of a number nine.
Yeah.
But I think back then it was just all about scoring goals.
Yeah.
And Jurgen was very good at scoring goals.
He was, yeah.
I think what was slightly unique about him as well is that Tottenham weren't a big club in terms of where we would finish in a Premiership.
Okay.
So he was really my first striker that wasn't in an elite club that was still scoring
and
a lot of goals.
And doing bits for
a somewhat
semi-decent side.
That's right, that's
thought.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you say glory hunter, you weren't, you know, I'm sorry to say this, but if you're a Tottenham supporter, you're not chasing glory, are you?
No. After the United, after that 6-month stint being a United supporter again, I didn't feel comfortable. So then I just decided, which teams are in the Premiership?
Okay.
And then, started watching Jurgen.
So other than Jurgen, who's the other sort of your Tottenham idol growing up?
Teddy Sheringham,
okay.
Teddy Sheringham.
Who obviously moved on to United, obviously, afterwards. Yeah. Yeah. Played for Millwall, played for Tottenham.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Some would probably say Sol Campbell.
That's
probably people's answers.
Who moved on to Arsenal?
No, okay. Definitely not Sol Campbell.
I think a little
bit later in the noughties.
Yeah.
Aaron Lennon.
I
really liked Aaron Lennon. He's probably still, to this day, my favourite player.
Tricky winger. Okay.
Yeah.
So Aaron Lennon. So I'm trying to think back, you know, Tottenham players. Me growing up, I think, obviously, Gareth Bale is the idol.
Yeah.
Harry Kane.
Yeah, Kane.
Yeah. But, you know, last time we spoke about, you know, Tottenham football, you know, you mentioned that you've fallen a little bit out of love with football. Why is that?
So one thing that I'm seeing about football now is becoming very data driven.
Okay.
And also it's very systematic.
Okay.
So what you're seeing are you're seeing now players who are sticking to their role down to the T. And what's happening is removing that originality.
Okay.
So growing up, you had players like R9, Ronaldo.
Mm-hmm.
You had players Ronaldinho, Rivaldo.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, these players, they had something a bit different. Kaká, how mm-hmm. can I forget Kaká?
Yeah.
Now, these players, they had roles, somewhat roles, probably freer roles in comparison.
Attacking midfielders, obviously.
Yeah, in comparison to the players of today.
Mm.
But what they had, they had a bit of magic.
Mm.
And I think sometimes that's what is missing. So being a Spurs supporter, I always say this to a lot of my Spurs fellow Spurs supporters.
Mm.
When you look at Brennan Johnson physically is a physical specimen.
Mm.
So he's got a great body, good size, fast, strong, everything.
Mm. He's an athlete. Yeah.
But this is what Michael Owen said, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Owen said that the modern day footballer is an athlete.
Mm.
I don't want athletes. I want a little bit of magic.
You want originality.
I want originality. And that's where sometimes, particularly with Brennan Johnson, he goes wrong, because sometimes he's looking for that pass.
Okay.
Sometimes he doesn't want to take on the player.
Mm.
Or he just wants to stay on the wide. Sometimes come inside.
Can I bring in terms of looking for players who have a little bit of originality? You know, when you look through the Tottenham side, what about Maddison? Wouldn't you argue he's a player with a bit of originality? He gets injured a lot because I think he can't handle the physicality of the modern day football.
Yeah.
So what do you think of someone like Maddison, for example? And also saying that, what about Kane? You know, Kane is, you know, very much, you can argue, a data-driven individual, but, you know, a bit of originality with him as well. But let's start with Maddison.
No.
Simple no.
No, I think Maddison is akin to the attacking midfielders that we see now.
Okay.
I think he's technically very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
But in the close games, Maddison goes quiet. And I think one of the main problems we have with Maddison is that he goes quiet. He goes missing. He goes absent in the big games.
In the big games, okay.
Yeah,
carry on, sorry.
And that's why against City, when he did score those two goals and had a remarkable performance, you could say, it was something we have been looking for.
So lack of consistency
is
something.
He is lacking in consistency, but also he's just lacking in being impactful in the big games. Yeah, so I think Maddison, he's not as original as I would like him to be.
Okay.
I would want to see a little bit more magic.
Okay.
But I don't know if he's got that in his locker.
So, in this Tottenham side, because obviously, you know, you've fallen a little bit out of love, but you're keeping up with things, right?
I am.
You know, and obviously, you know, it was unprecedented, it was unexpected, it's unlike City. They were well beaten by Tottenham side. So, would you say that the hard work of a good Tottenham side or just City not being good enough?
I think it's a bit of everything.
Mm.
So Tottenham fans, we are expecting to have a few drummings this season, rather the opposite. So we expect to be battering a few teams this season.
Okay, so it's expected, 4 goals, 3 goals,
100%.
Okay.
City was an outlier.
Mm.
We wasn't expecting to beat City 4-0.
Mm.
The thing with City is that we've got a good record against them.
Okay, you do.
We have a very good record against them.
Liverpool supporters appreciate that.
So, in terms of us beating them, it's not necessarily a surprise because we seem to have their number. We seem to be their kryptonite at this moment in time.
Yeah.
Why the 4-0 was a bit of a surprise.
Yes.
Is the fact that our last game, we had just lost at home to Ipswich.
Okay.
We were still recovering from weeks prior losing to Crystal Palace.
And prior to that Ipswich game, you'd also beaten Man City in the League Cup.
In the Cup, yeah.
So what is the issue? Because my big question for you as, you know, what other than players not having originality, what do you need from Tottenham to fall back in love with watching Tottenham consistently?
Okay, so I will say this. I'll be brutally honest. Mm. We have a loser's mentality.
Oh.
We have a loser's mentality.
What do you mean? Can you elaborate?
Hugo Lloris recently came out a week or so ago.
Mm.
And he said a few days before the Champions League final against you guys, Liverpool, Daniel Levy gave everybody a watch, like a it was a very expensive watch,
right?
Now, I can understand where Hugo Lloris was going with this. Mm. It's, we haven't won anything. Why are you giving us, why are you giving those players something so luxurious when they haven't won anything?
So precious.
But then it just goes to show that there is just, expectations are low.
Wow.
We've got low expectations. Just getting to the final is good enough for them.
Wow.
And that's just not acceptable
okay.
for a fan like me.
Okay.
So I guess a rebuttal from other fans' perspective would be, well, you guys are only Tottenham. You haven't won anything since 2008.
Which was the League Cup against
Chelsea. Yeah. So that's their response. You should be happy getting to the Champions League final. Mm. Yeah, in some respects, I am very happy. I was extremely happy.
Mm.
But as fans, it's entertainment, but also we want trophies, we want accolades.
Mm.
And winning that Champions League would have been absolutely amazing for the club. It would have just, it's just amazing. Okay. It would be absolutely unheard of for us to win it, considering and our recent history.
And it's a Champions League.
Yeah.
And when you say, you know, the loser mentality thing.
Oh, yes, sorry. Let me add to that, sorry. Yeah. So after that season, when we got to the Champions League final, we didn't spend anything. We didn't spend on players. And the communication from Daniel Levy was, well,
that's Pochettino. That's a Pochettino, a very good Pochettino side, isn't it?
It was a stadium. You know, we need to fund the stadium.
You need more players, right?
Exactly. But we need players. We needed to push on. Some of those players were under Pochettino for 3, 4, 5 seasons. Mm-hmm. You got to understand, Klopp, Pochettino, Tuchel,
Pep, obviously.
Pep. Yeah. These players, you can only be that intensive for 3, 4 seasons. Then you have to start buying new players.
Yeah,
you have to.
Because of their style of football.
That's right. And it was our time, but unfortunately we didn't.
You know, when you mentioned the loser mentality, and you know, I think that's harsh, but you know, you make a good point because Ange Postecoglou, you know, I'm a big fan of his actually.
Yeah.
But Ange said this, I think it was last season or 2 seasons ago, where it was Arsenal City looking to fight for the title.
Yeah.
And this was game 37, Tottenham versus City. And obviously you guys are City's bogey side.
Yeah.
And if you beat, you know, you beat City, Arsenal move top.
Yeah.
And Son has that chance and he misses.
Yeah.
Obviously. But there's a whole situation afterwards where Tottenham supporters are almost like content. They're happy to lose.
Yeah.
And Ange Postecoglou, he was not happy with that. You know, I think, you know, the interview afterwards, he was got a bit tetchy, got a bit, you know, a bit sensitive. Like, you know, you guys need to change your mentality.
Right.
And, you know, what was your take on that? Because would you rather beat City, win, or would you have, you know, happy to have lost the game and seen Arsenal, for example, won the game and seen Arsenal win the title?
I was on Ange's side.
Mm.
So the rivalry with Arsenal, for me, is not the most important thing right now as a Spurs fan.
Mm.
I think because we've gone so long without winning a trophy, everything is about winning a trophy. Yes, it's very good to beat your rivals, but essentially it's just about winning a trophy.
Mm.
At that time, again, an argument is, well, there was no goal for you in terms of a trophy at that moment in time. So beating your rival or stopping your rivals is, I guess, secondary.
Mm.
But it's not, actually. Mm. It's not. You play football to win.
Absolutely.
Under no circumstances are you look to draw or you look to lose.
Yep.
You must go
to win.
And win.
Yeah.
And that is it. So for myself, I'm definitely on Angie's side.
Mm.
A little bit perplexed about why some Spurs supporters wanted to forfeit the game.
Mm.
However, I'll just leave it to them, but I know where I am. I try and win every game.
So, Ange Postecoglou, you know, he's a long line of Tottenham managers, isn't it? In, you know, let's say 20 years or so. It's been a lot. It's been a few.
Yeah.
For me, in recent memory, I think the most successful ones have been people like, obviously, Harry Redknapp.
Yeah.
Obviously, Ange Postecoglou, he's doing a good job.
Yeah.
But Pochettino obviously got them to a final, the first final in a while. But, you know, what does Ange Postecoglou have to do to win something credible? And when you say something, what is something credible for you as a Tottenham supporter? Is it the Premier League? Is that possible? Is it the League Cup? Is it an FA Cup? Is it, you know, is it a Conference League, for example? Is it Europa League? What would make Tottenham supporters feel like, actually, we're content with this, we're moving in the right direction?
I can't speak on behalf of all Tottenham supporters, I think for myself, it's just winning any trophy at this moment in time. I'm a big Ange fan. Mm. I have said previously to fellow Spurs supporters this season that I do think he will go.
And that was, you think?
Yeah, that was before the Ipswich game, because at the time, I think
it was... Do you think getting fired or just him walking away from the job?
Probably getting fired. Now, the reason being, it's not because I want him to go. It's because of the losses and the inconsistencies. Mm. If you look at the bottom three in the Premiership, you've got Southampton, Ipswich and Crystal Palace.
Yes.
Ipswich and Crystal Palace, they've won one league game. Mm. It was against Tottenham. It was against Tottenham. Oh, do you understand?
I do. So I get that.
That's a big problem. Yeah. Also against Arsenal, we've had three home league losses while he's been there. Three home losses to Arsenal in a row.
That Arsenal game, I think, stuck out for a lot of people.
It did.
It looked like a side that was just... They look like they're giving up.
Yeah.
For me, I think, you know, we spoke about this in the podcast a few episodes ago. And for me personally, I think the one that really stuck out was the Brighton game. You know, you were leading 2-0. And that's a game you see out. And Brighton come back, not just, you know, not to draw the game, but to win. Yeah. And what does that say? Who do you blame? Do you blame Ange for something like, or do you blame the players for not, just not having, like you said, you know, do they have a loser's mentality?
Yeah, I think that Brighton game, I remember well. I was watching it. I didn't send my friend a message because there was just something.
I know, you stay quiet in those.
Yeah, I just wanted to stay quiet because we played really well. They had their chances.
Well, the first half, you played very well, yeah.
And then what really angered Spurs fans was just how long it took for Ange to change things up. Because even when Brighton scored, Ange was just there. And if it's interesting because when you listen to his post-match
interview
he basically alluded to that he wanted the players to get themselves out of trouble.
What does that mean? In a game you're winning.
Yeah, especially when it got to 2-2. He almost wanted us to the players to correct it themselves.
Yeah.
But what he realized is that there is a legacy of Spurs who do this. This is why we have this whole theory or concept of Spursy. Mm. This has been happening for years where we have opportunities to either win a game, win a trophy, or be in a really good position and we let ourselves down.
Yeah.
So what Ange needed to remember at that in that specific game is that we needed change because we just don't have the mentality. We don't have players who have the mentality to see games out. Now, again, there's a lovely argument. You look at players like James Maddison. You know, these guys are experienced internationals. Romero's a World Cup winner.
He is. Yeah.
You've got Vicario, Italian international. Poro, all of these of these guys. But as Spurs fans, if you look at them individually and you see when the going gets tough, a lot of these players crumble. Mm. That's just the reality. This is why it goes back to James Maddison. He goes absent.
Okay, I'm gonna respond with: do you not think data will look for players who won't crumble in that situation? Is that? Because I don't know what the Spurs model is in terms of looking for players, but I know very well the Liverpool model. And, you know, our model is looking at not just the statistics, but looking at the personality of the individuals and how they will gel with the other players and how they will accept the culture of a club, for example. And do you not think maybe data then is where Spurs need to start looking to, you know, to rectify that problem, find players who aren't going to crumble? You know, at, you know, you're winning 2-0. You see a game out like that, and maybe the problem is, maybe the good enough data isn't being used.
So we have a data-driven strategy. So I think that was spearheaded by Brighton.
Okay.
And now I think quite a few teams are doing
it. Liverpool do use it as well.
The problem is there are two types of data. You've got qualitative and quantitative.
Okay.
So a lot of it, you've got quantitative. So it's all of these numbers and stats and all of that.
Just for anyone who isn't aware, Nathan is a business and econ teacher. Yeah. So this is, you know, you need to listen because you might learn something right now.
So quantitative is all numerical and statistical data. Mm. Then you've got qualitative, which is all about opinions and feelings.
Okay.
The problem that we have right now is two number. It's all statistical driven.
Okay.
And how do you measure an individual when they come into a bigger club? For example, United.
Okay.
So there are a lot of those United players who are good and will probably do well at, say, maybe an Aston Villa.
Okay.
But when you go into Old Trafford, there's an aura. I would like to think I could play in most stadiums in the world if I was good enough.
Okay.
Playing at the Kop or playing at Anfield would be extremely difficult.
Yeah.
Playing at maybe a stadium like Galatasaray would be extremely difficult.
Bernabeu.
Now, signing for certain clubs, Man United still have that aura.
Mm.
Do you understand? And so a lot of the players, you cannot measure when they moved from a smaller club to a bigger club and the expectation is just slightly higher, particularly with Tottenham, how they're going to deal with that.
Okay.
And then on top of that, when they're going through a little run, how are they dealing with that?
Okay.
And these are the things that you can't necessarily quantify. Mm. You really have to get into the psyche and the psychology of a player.
Okay.
And it's always a risk.
Okay.
It's always a risk.
So maybe Tottenham need to look into sports psychologists, better sort of sports psychologists then, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so pro sports psychology. Mm. If I'm not listening, that's probably my most, that's the genre that I listen to the most.
Like your second passion.
Psychology.
Yeah, okay.
Because you really need to know to the psyche of an individual because it makes sense. I want to go into a different sport, but it will make sense because I will relate back to football.
Yes.
I remember listening to Novak Djokovic from tennis, and he was saying the difference between the elite players and everybody else is how they deal with losing points.
Okay.
Right? That's the difference. Because in a tennis match, you have to get over losing a point very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And that...
You can't dwell on it, basically.
You cannot dwell on it. And that's what stuck with me. When Haaland misses chances...
He carries on. That's what we love about, for example, you know, Marty and I, we love Darwin Nunez.
Yes.
Because he misses chances. People slate him for missing chances, easiest chances. But you know what? The boy carries on.
But this is it.
And he keeps getting chances.
Exactly.
You know, and that maybe that's a big thing. Maybe that's what Spurs need. You know, you need an entire a team of sports psychologists to help you change the mentality of the players or who else? What about the fans? You know, how do you change the mentality of a group of fans who are so used to being, I'm sorry to say this, but Spurs, you know, they know, you know, we go 2-0 up. Their mentality is, oh, we could lose this game.
So you can't, I really like Ange, and he said this last season. I remember when we were top after 10 games, and they asked him, should we kind of dampen the expectations? And he said, look, if the fans want to believe, let them believe.
Mm.
And what I like with that is you can't really change the fan base.
Okay.
Just leave them. Just
no.
Because they're external. You can't really deal with
you
them.
You can't touch them,
But what you can deal with is a mentality. You can deal with a little change.
Mm.
Now, I'm sure you lot remember the infamous Conte rant just before he got sacked.
Now,
for me, that was...
Oh, my God, Conte managed Spurs.
Yeah, exactly.
You forget that, don't you? Yeah.
That for me, was the best analysis of the club that I have seen in my lifetime.
And it was a rant.
It was a rant.
You know, he went in and he slated everyone without really naming names, but you knew...
From the top.
You know, it was from the top. It's Daniel Levy.
That's right. That's right. And I think that's what needs to happen. And I guess to answer your question earlier on what you said about Ange.
Yeah.
Ange needs to get the trust of the players, which I think he has.
Yes.
But now he needs to have extremely persuasive skills to get Daniel Levy to spend more.
So you're asking the manager...
Yes.
To convince the multimillionaire.
The businessman.
The businessman who sees the club as a business to part with money on the right type of players.
That's correct.
On that note, I've got one more question for you.
Let's go.
Okay. Describe Spurs in one word.
Inconsistent.
Oh, believe it at that. Marty's shaking his head. We'll leave it at that. Nathan, thank you so much. I really enjoyed that. We need to have you back here because I think, you know, there's a lot that we can continue talking about. We didn't even get to talk about the other stuff, you know. Thank you again for absolutely embarrassing City because, you know, we somehow managed to win our game. We did our job. So now City comes to Liverpool next and let's see what happens because I think I've got a really good feeling this, you know, the season feels special for us. And, you know, unlike Spurs, I'm sorry to say this, you know, Liverpool are a winning side. A little bit of banter there, I'm sorry. But yeah, but Nathan, thank you so much. Really appreciate that. Yeah, we'll hopefully get you back on here in the future.
Nice one.
Okay, you take care.
You too.
Goodbye.